Welcome to the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. And today we want to talk to author Robin Philpott, author, publisher. He has a book that people should be obtaining. People ask me, what should I read? And they should read Robin Philpott, Rwanda, and the New Scramble for Africa. From Tragedy to Useful Imperial Fiction. Welcome to the show, Robin.
Thanks for inviting me, Phil.
Robin, I wanted to talk to you today because, you know, Colonel Bagasora, whose name looms so large in all discussions anywhere, any quarter of the world where Rwanda is talked about, the colonel's name is used. He's sort of a marker for people, a reference, and he passed away in late September. And the headlines were, I guess, very predictable. They called him a mastermind, the evil genius, the man behind the genocide. But by the way, as pointed out in page 192 of your book, the court, the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, tried Colonel Bagasora together with three others. The prime accusation and case made by the prosecutors was that he and the other three officers conspired to commit genocide. That would be to be the mastermind, the man behind the crimes. That he was acquitted of that, but that hasn't been the headline. You would think at the time of his passing, they might have quoted even Alison DeForge, who was one of the prosecution witnesses, or Philip Renschens or others who were involved with the tribunal, who say now we need to reassess, we need to re-examine what we think we know about what occurred in Rwanda, 1994. Because as those trials evolved and as the attempt was made to show that a conspiracy had taken place and that Colonel Bagasora was a leader, the headline should have been cleared of charge of genocide, which would have been actual news and with some foundation. Now, I happen to know that you stay on the subject of Rwanda. You follow it as an author and of course, as someone who knows how important the story is. You recently spoke to another major figure of the 1994 events, and that is Major Luc Marchal of the Belgian Army, who was in charge of, and you can correct me if I get it wrong, but he was in charge of the Kigali zone or area. On behalf of, as an officer of the UNAMIR, together with our famous General Dallaire, they were the most important officers there. Now, well, I'm interested to know, your program, of course, is in French. What moved you to talk to Luc Marchal and what news came out of that? Because, and incidentally, to my opinion, anytime Luc Marchal speaks, anyone who follows the issues of Rwanda should want to know what he's saying.
Yeah. Well, we were talking on the phone about the death of Bagasora and about various other things that occurred on the April 6th and April 7th and April 8th and so on. And he made a point to me. He said, you know, one thing that really upsets me is that people don't give the credibility that the military leaders of Rwanda deserve. And so we talked a bit more. And so I said, would you like to do an interview on the radio for it? And so we did that on Tuesday, last Tuesday. And it was he's a very thoughtful man. He's Colonel Luc Marchal, and he was was in command of 440 Belgian troops in what they call the Kibat, Kigali Battalion, during that period. He had was sent to Rwanda in December 93 and was there through that period. And his superior was Roméo Dallaire. And so but he was very close to all those events. And so I wanted to ask him to talk about that, what happened, how did it happen, and what was his observations about Colonel Bagosora and the other military leaders after the assassination.
We better stop and say the assassination, discuss what that was.
April 6th, 94, the missile shot down the President Habyarimana's plane and killed the head of head of staff of the Rwandan Armed Forces and the President of Burundi, Monsieur Ntaryamira. And that was at 8:30 on the evening of April 6th, which is perceived and seen by everybody as being what triggered what happened after, the tragedy that went on for years, if you include Congo. And so I asked him about that, and he said, well, before we talk about the assassination and the follow, we have to realize that this was, you might say, it was the result of an invasion, and it was the following up. It was in the wake of military events, and it took place after there had been a very serious peace accord, a peace process set up called the Arusha Accords as of August 1994, the first one, and the second was December 93, which defined, gave the RPF the right to have arms, weapons in the CND in Kigali. In other words, they were stationed there, but they were...
That was the Rwandan Parliament building.
Yeah.
The RPF, the so-called rebel army, a battalion in that parliament.
With very strict conditions about leaving, about not going out of there, not coming out with arms, with weapons, and so on. So those two agreements were what gave people, both on both sides, hope for peace. And those agreements had for the sharing of power. And so he said that's what preceded the shooting down of the plane. Then he said the plane was shot down and people were completely shook up. Early the 7th of April, he went to a meeting with the Rwandan, the heads of the Rwandan army, and you know, their armed forces, and Colonel Bagosora was there. And he said in front of him, he saw people who were completely shaken up. Just unbelievable. They couldn't believe what was happening. And their discussion was to say, how can we ensure the application of the Arusha Accords?
And I want to stop you just for a moment. Yeah. That's so important. He underlined that those officers were talking about how are we going to maintain it. Is that right?
Yeah.
The Arusha Accord.
Yeah. And how are we going to maintain them? He said there was nobody in front of him with whom he met there who he could say had some kind of conspiracy. Their goal at that time was to ensure the peace accords would be applied. They reached out for the UNAMIR to help them apply the accords. And they reached out through the UNAMIR to the UN and the Security Council to help make sure that the Arusha Accord would continue. So he said personally, when he arrived in November, in December 93, he had a very bad, well, not a very even perception of Colonel Bagosora. He said there was so much propaganda in Belgium already and in Europe and elsewhere against the armed forces. But he said he realized that there was no story of good versus bad. There were a very serious group of people who wanted peace. And this is how he described the armed forces. He said that regarding the forces, and I want to make sure I do justice to what he said, but he said the armed forces, the Rwandan army and our armed military people were very cooperative in ensuring that they complied with the agreement, because it was a very detailed agreement on what they could do and what they couldn't do and how they would do it, how they reported to UNAMIR. And he said, but the RPF basically disregarded the accords. He said they were not in compliance at all with the agreement. So this was
all right.
Just
can I interrupt you there, just so my own understanding? Is he saying they were non-compliant in December 1993, or are we talking April 6th?
Between December 1993. Uh-huh. Until the shooting down the plane, I'll get to that, what he said.
Yeah.
And he said, I asked him, I said, well, how would you, you're a military lead, you're a man of military background, how would you qualify their reaction to the shooting down the plane and all that had happened? And he says, that is what upsets me so much. He said, we have to remember that the RPF was an emanation from a foreign country, a foreign military service. They invaded the country. And he said, yes, maybe there were some of them who had, a lot of them were people who were former Rwandans, but they had citizenship, nationality, Ugandan nationality, and they left. They were a foreign army that invaded the country. And he said every one of these military leaders had taken an oath to defend their country, defend the country's integrity, their territorial integrity, defend the people against invasions. And he said, what we've done now is basically, not we, but the world has denied the right to these military leaders, and basically to Hutus, he said, to defend their country. That is what underlies this this sullying of their names and this business of calling them all kinds of names, whereas what they were doing is what is expected of military leaders when their country has been invaded. Mm-hmm. I think that was an important point about the fact that it was a foreign military force that invaded the country from 1990, and we're still doing it. Mm-hmm. I asked him, he had told me about a conversation that Romeo Dallaire had with the leader of the RPF in Kigali, who was in what they call the CND, the Rwandan Parliament, with the troops. And it was something on the UNAMIR radio, which was the UN radio. And it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Excuse me again. I just want to remind our listeners, this is the voice of Robin Philpott, publisher of Baraka Books. He's also the author of Rwanda and the New Scramble for Africa. And this is, we're hearing, of course, of his recent, very important interview with Colonel Luc Marchal of the Belgian Army, who is commander of the most important and the best armed, best trained forces in Rwanda on April 6, 1994, when all these events unfolded. I'm sorry I interrupted you, but I want to make sure that listeners know that. Go on.
It gave me a chance to make sure I know I'm saying the right what we recorded. This conversation, Romeo Dallaire, the General Dallaire, who was the head of the military part of the UNAMIR, at 3:30 in the afternoon on April 7th, so it's the next day after the assassination. And he was speaking to him, and Luc Marchal heard it. And it's something that hasn't been heard about.
This, by the way, you're the one who's covered this. So for you, this was fresh and new information. Luc Marchal is putting it on the record, what he heard on a radio.
Yeah, and it was a closed circuit UNAMIR radio, but it was Dallaire speaking to Seth Sendashonga, who was the head of one of the leaders of the RPF in Kigali, who said, we're going to mobilize our troops and we're going to come out of the CND armed, because unless you stop the massacres, unless the massacres are stopped. And Dallaire said to him very clearly that if you do leave the CND, leave the bear and with your arms, and then you will bear total responsibility for putting an end to the Arusha Accord, that you will for resumption of the war. In other words, you will be responsible, total responsibility resuming a war which had been put on hold because of the Arusha peace agreement. And 1 hour later, the RPF troops were mobilized there and started the war in Kigali. But Luc Marchal reminded me that within minutes of the downing of the plane at 8:30 on April 6th, the RPF troops in the demilitarized zone were already on the move. In other words, he said that everybody knew that, but it was after this discussion that Dallaire had with Seth Sendashonga of the RPF at that time, that they moved out, and they were warned that they were basically putting an end to the Arusha Accord. And you know, you cannot go back on things like that. Once you can't sort of go back and say, well, we shouldn't have done that. Once you put an end to the peace, you know, war has, you know, the consequences. And
yes, so, well, you will be certainly culpable if the crime is breaking the peace, but they decided to create new crimes, different ones.
Yeah, he also pointed out that the consequences of shooting down the plane are massive. We know, we talk about the period between April 93 and July 1933 as the genocide. But the massive mass killings that have gone on from the time of that into the Congo, and still today, he kept reminding, where there are people being killed, they are all in the wake of the shooting down of the plane. So he also said that once they had put an end to the peace by shooting down the plane, but also by mobilizing their troops and putting an end to the peace, they refused, the RPF refused every demand by the Rwandan forces, Colonel Bagosora, who was then one of the leaders, for a ceasefire. They just said, we don't want anything to do with a ceasefire. And so that, in other words, if they weren't cooperative before April 6th, they just pretended the UNAMIR didn't exist, that the peace accord didn't exist, because he said very clearly their objective was to take power at whatever cost. Their objective was not to share power, which was the basis of the Arusha agreement. So yeah. It is that from the time they mobilized their troops, from the time they shut down the plane, they were going for total control of the government, of the power, of power in Kigali. And by so doing, they prevented, they made it impossible for the Rwandan armed forces to put an end to the massacres, because there were a lot of, there was a lot of killing going on. And the Rwandan forces wanted the ceasefire so that they could stop this killing. But the RPF just said no.
No, the RPF had created an interesting paradox. They say, stop the massacres or we keep attacking. And the Rwandan army says, we have to, you have to stop attacking so that we can put an end to the massacres.
Yeah.
So it was a really the actually an old military trick, putting your opponent on a no choice situation. Whatever he chooses, you tell him he's wrong. And by the way, we should say for the record, that is what the testimony of the officers was at the court, that their perception was that they were not dealing with, in the RPF, with a group, with an army that intended to have any kind of compromise of the type, actually the basic compromise called the Arusha Accords. This was an army bent on seizing power. Yeah. And it's interesting, you're telling us that Colonel Marshall, Luke Marshall, who was absolutely one of the most important witnesses, and certainly he had important responsibilities, and that's his conclusion. Did he talk about how he felt about this? I mean, I know that he's wrestled with this subject. Did he go into that at all? What his perception? I've read his various testimony. You know, he spoke various places. I've followed it. Actually, we interviewed him on the Taylor Report. I'm sure it tortured him because we were speaking English and I had 101 questions. But I know that. And he himself was, they tried to place the responsibility for the deaths of some of his soldiers on him. So I know that he said that, well, you know, when he started out, he had been told that the RPF were the good guys.
Yeah.
Do you know, I don't know if he mentioned, in his testimony, he said that he had met Kagame in May of 93. Kagame and one of his top aides had been in Brussels. And he met him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in other words, okay, he's already introduced. He didn't know Colonel Bagosora. He didn't know Habyarimana, but he knew already in 93, he had met the top commander of the RPF. I don't know if he ever suspected or now suspects that somebody was helping shape his perceptions.
Yeah. Well, you know, as he said, he said he came there with a very bad perception of the Rwandan military leaders and Colonel Bagosora in particular. And that changed within weeks or months of when he got there from in December, that changed. He wanted to make the point that he said, the shooting down of the plane is the element which is by far the most important of the events. And its consequences are massive. We haven't even taken stock really of what it is. And he said, but there's an omerta, you know, it's taboo. He said he can't imagine that an event like that, which is so momentous, nobody seems to want to know why, how, and how it happened. No officially, it's officially, we're just ignoring it. And he said that one thing he did say about the RPF, he said, the RPF used the peace process just as a way to gain time to build propaganda against the Rwandan government. They had no intention of sharing power. And he actually said it was like Hitler. When Hitler signed a non-aggression pact with the Soviet Union, his only goal was to give him time so he could go in and invade and, you know, massacre the Soviet Union. So he said that that's the mentality that Kagame and the RPF had. which is an interesting comparison. You know, he said, they were just buying time in order to, with this peace process, in order to prepare their taking of power. Mm-hmm. I did ask him. You mentioned he got accused and was court-martialed about the death of the Belgian troops, the Belgian paratroopers.
Ten soldiers.
Ten soldiers, and there were 12 Belgian citizens. But the 10 soldiers, he was court-martialed. He was totally cleared of any responsibility. He pointed out that the responsibility for that was those who shot down the plane, because he explained that the situation where the Belgian soldiers were killed, they were perceived as the people responsible for shooting down the plane. That's what was going on. So if you go after him because the troops were there, he was following orders to send the troops to where he sent them, but they were doing that as a result of the shooting down of the plane, you know, which was the shooting down destruction of the established order. And I asked him about how do Belgians feel about our General Dallaire? And he said, well, Belgians would have very much liked to have heard him answer questions, because Belgians in general were shaken up. They lost 10 soldiers, their families, and they lost 12 Belgian citizens. And they would like to have heard Dallaire come and speak about it. He chose not to. So he said, so there was quite a bit of anger with regards to Dallaire. Although it's calmed down now because time has passed.
But I'm sorry, you used the word anger. Anger from what quarter?
Anger among the Belgian public opinion. That's how we described it. The Belgian president was quite angry. He says, now that's calmed down because time has passed. But in areas, people who follow things in central, the Great Lakes and Africa are still angry about Dallaire's refusal to come and explain what happened.
By the way, that's a story that is never treated here. Talk about things that are verboten or taboo. There is no close scrutiny, because actually General Dallaire, the UN ambassador for the Arusha Accords, it was at Bobo, I think, Bobo, and of course, Colonel Marshall, whom you are telling us about his views, these individuals made decisions which the people of Canada and the people of Belgium should know about. Yeah. By the way, Belgium has had an inquiry, at least one, maybe more. There's never been one here, although it's understood by anybody who looks at the issue, the Belgian population would like to know what the Canadian general has to say to help them understand how they lost those soldiers.
Yeah.
Because I hate to remind them all, but there is command responsibility. And this seems to be, you know, the cards always get shuffled every time you try to ask a question. They move it to other matters or a different name. But that circle, those three gentlemen made a rather serious decision. But I like the fact you're pointing out that Colonel Marshall says, let's take it back to whoever assassinated the president, set the ball rolling so that a number of individuals, officers and politicians made fateful decisions. But that was all after the big one, the decision to murder the president of Rwanda.
Yeah, and the head of the armed forces, you know, at the same time.
General Savimana.
Yeah, exactly. I had something I wanted to add about it, but it's sort of slipped my mind. But the Belgian Senate had an investigation and this is me speaking, by the way, this is we talked about it, but one of their recommendations of the Belgian Senate, this is in 98, they were requested that the UN establish international investigation, independent investigation of who shot down that plane. There's none been. There has been no such investigation. And he said, regretted that the Senate didn't push very hard. Parliament didn't push very hard on it.
Well, you know, that takes us almost to the title of subtitle of your book, From Tragedy to Useful Imperial Fiction. These, when you realize that the players are France, Belgium, United States, these are not countries that appreciate anybody looking over their shoulder. And we might remind everybody that there was a black box on the plane, and the investigator from France, chief investigator Bruguière, asked the United Nations for the black box, and they couldn't find it. I mean, you know, if you're a policeman and you're going around interviewing people and the guy says, I understand you have an important piece of evidence, I'd like to come by tomorrow and pick it up. And he says, I can't find it. You say, this is a really interesting group, except now you're talking about major countries, powerful countries with a big interest. And it's if we did have a UN inquiry, people being talked about would include Kofi Annan. And Boutros Ghali, who's now passed, but who told you, I believe, you're the reporter who spoke to Boutros Ghali, the Americans were 100% responsible.
Yeah.
By the way, does Luc Marchal know that he said that? I don't know if he read.
No, he read my book because it came out in French first, and I've talked to him about that, and he's a very how would you say, posed man. He doesn't make, you know, flying wild statements, but he was very interested to hear that, and that Boutros Ghali had told me that. But there's one thing that I'd like to add about it is that here in Canada, when I'm talking about Canada and in Quebec, whenever there's a question of Rwanda, there's only one person they go in and ask to comment on it. And his name is Roméo Dallaire. And I that is absolutely deplorable that they cannot go further. You have to say that our media tend to be propaganda and not information, because there are varying positions of people who cannot be accused of not being neutral. A neutral observer or a participant like Luc Marchal, who is very careful with what he says. I've only heard him, other than us, you, and on my program, he was interviewed once in La Presse in 2008, but I haven't seen any other interviews with him about what happened. So, you know, it really is damning about our media.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's, I guess, also revealing that it's the questions that can't be asked, or there are the questions that should be pursued. But we've turned these things into one source, which is why we have the tragedy of the ignorant headline that the court says he's not guilty of conspiracy. He dies after years in prison, and it says the mastermind. Instead of saying, was never convicted of this crime. Well, they do, by the way. I'm in one of the stories. That was buried in the story, and you say, "Yeah, but that's the headline."
Exactly.
Instead, they had to, because they're telling like a children's story, which has to have a happy ending. The bad guy went in prison and he died. Yeah. Except that the court didn't make the conclusion that the reporter, CBC, Toronto Star, they say, "Oh, the villain died." Except that the court didn't say that he was. I mean, it's true that he was convicted of various lesser offenses, but they were of the type which would make you wonder, well, how, if there wasn't a conspiracy, how could he have done the lesser ones that you're talking about? Because they say they cleared him. It's very important. Robin Philpott, thank you very much for speaking to Luc Marchal, such an important player, I hope that our discussion and discussions of this type might prompt some self-respecting journalist to actually follow this up. Luc Marchal, whether they like it or not, is not going to go away in history, because if you say who is at the meeting, Luc Marchal.
Yeah.
And you've just added a very important, he's put a piece of information on the table, which others might want to look at, but he said that he listened to a conversation between an RPF leader and General Dallaire on the day after the assassination, and in which the general said to that RPF leader, if you leave the parliament building, that's going to be an act. What was it? I will put the word to you.
You will have total responsibility for having broken the peace record,
having broken
agreement, and resuming the war. And taking up the war again. So
he was, when he said that, he was absolutely right. Now we have to say if he said it, because this is not something that we have known about previous.
Yeah.
So we're very grateful that you spoke to Luc Marchal. We're very glad he was sharing, particularly, as you know, new information.
Yeah.
It's a great book, Rwanda and the New Scramble for Africa, From Tragedy to Useful Imperial Fiction, Robin Philpott, publisher of Baraka Books. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you.